This is a 5 train. The next stop is Wall Street.
Herzlich willkommen zu Wall Street Weekly, dem Börsenpodcast aus New York. Ich bin Sophie Schimanski und ich freue mich, dass Sie mit dabei sind. Seit Corona die Wirtschaft bestimmt, wird mit besonderer Spannung auf Unternehmenszahlen geschaut. Die Berichtssaison steht noch am Anfang. Vergangene Woche haben die großen Finanzhäuser ihre Bücher geöffnet. Die größte US-amerikanische Bank JP Morgan Chase hat den Anfang gemacht. Es folgten im Laufe der Woche Wells Fargo, die Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America und Morgan Stanley. Ihre Zahlen erzählen alle eine ähnliche Geschichte. Da sind die strauchelnden Konsumenten und Unternehmen auf der einen Seite. Die Banken sind hier auf das Schlimmste vorbereitet. Mit Milliarden von Dollar stehen sie in den Startlöchern, um ausfallende Kredite zu bedienen. Und auf der anderen Seite sind da die handelswütigen Anleger. Die Banken zeichnen eine wichtige Momentaufnahme der Wirtschaft, weil sie das Kaufverhalten von Unternehmen, aber auch von Investoren und Konsumenten abbilden. Katie Stockton ist Gründerin der Investment-Research-Firma Fairleigh Strategies und sagt auf CNBC, wie wichtig diese Ergebnisse sind. Nicht nur für die Bankenwerte an sich, sondern auch für den S&P 500, also für den breiten Markt.
They're really at a critical juncture where if they bounce from here, which appears likely from a technical perspective, they could contribute to the broader market by outperforming and exhibiting leadership, especially if the technology stocks take pause here, which would be very natural after that performance that they've seen. If we were to see the bank stocks as one group really kick in here from a relative perspective, that could be a very big market positive, help the S&P 500 perhaps get back up to the highs there.
Die Kursentwicklung war nach den Ergebnissen größtenteils positiv, denn die Ergebnisse waren im Schnitt besser als erwartet. Doch das täuscht nicht darüber hinweg, dass die Banken in einem schwierigen Umfeld agieren. Der KBW Nasdaq Bank Index und der Dow Jones US Banken Index, der listet 62 Banken und Finanzinstitute, die stehen immer noch deutlich unterhalb ihrer Vorkrisenniveaus. Mein Interviewgast heute ist ein Finanzmarktexperte. Ken Leon ist Forschungsleiter bei CFRA Research und beobachtet dort vor allem die Finanzinstitute. Außerdem gibt es heute noch einen weiteren persönlichen Blick auf mein New York hier. Viele von Ihnen fragen immer wieder, wie schlimm es ist mit Corona. Wir schauen zusammen darauf mit New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo. Er lobt und er schimpft. Wem was gilt, dazu mehr am Ende. In Krisenzeiten wie diesen haben Banken eine besondere Signalwirkung. Für die neuesten Quartalszahlen ist mit dem Schlimmsten gerechnet worden, den schlechtesten Zahlen seit der Finanzkrise. Die Banken haben diesmal auch keine Guidance, keinen Ausblick gegeben. Deswegen sind die Analysten im Vorhinein im Dunkeln getappt. Der CEO von JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, hat Analysten im Earnings Call gesagt, dass in dieser Krise einfach alles anders ist.
In the normal recession, when unemployment goes up, delinquencies go up, charge-offs go up, home prices go down. None of that's true here. Incomes right. go down, savings go down. Savings are up, incomes are up, home prices are up. You will see the effect of this recession. You're just not going to see it right away because of all the stimulus and the fact, you know, 60 or 70% of the unemployed are making more money than they were making when they were working. So it's just very peculiar times.
Immerhin wappnen sich die Banken für diese besonderen Zeiten. Die 6 großen Häuser haben insgesamt mehr als 30 Milliarden an Reserven zurückgelegt für Kreditausfälle oder Zahlungsverzüge. Diese Rückstellungen liegen deutlich über dem, was sie in den ersten 3 Monaten des Jahres weggelegt hatten. Nur, niemand weiß, wie es weitergeht. Ein Lichtblick für Banken mit größeren Trading Desks sind die Schwankungen in den Aktienmärkten. Volatilität und eine hohe Handelsaktivität sind natürlich bares Geld in Gebühren. Deswegen haben sich die Banken retten können, die mit einer starken Leistung im Investmentbanking und Trading magere Geschäftsbereiche ausgleichen konnten. Morgan Stanley und Goldman Sachs verzeichneten besonders starke Ergebnisse, weil Trading und Investmentbanking ihre wichtigsten Geschäftsbereiche sind. Bei Morgan Stanley kommt darüber hinaus noch ein großer Bereich der Vermögensverwaltung hinzu. Die Investmentbank Goldman Sachs verzeichnete beim Umsatz im Aktienhandel das beste Ergebnis seit 11 Jahren. Morgan Stanley verzeichnete im Investmentbanking-Bereich des Unternehmens einen Umsatzplus von 39% und im Bereich Aktienhandel sogar fast 70% Umsatzwachstum. Auf der anderen Seite JP Morgan Chase und Citigroup. Die verzeichneten auf breiter Front Gewinneinbrüche aufgrund zurückgelegter Reserven. Dieses zur Seite gelegte Geld ist eine Ausgabe, ein Kostenpunkt. Und deswegen wirkt sie gewinnmindernd. Für die größte der US-amerikanischen Banken JP Morgan fiel der Gewinn nicht mal halb so hoch aus wie im Vorjahresquartal. Und das, obwohl der Umsatz aus dem Handel mit festverzinslichen Wertpapieren doppelt so hoch lag wie vor einem Jahr. Hart getroffen ist die Citigroup mit 73% Gewinneinbruch insgesamt. Aber auch hier lagen die Einnahmen aus dem Handel mit festverzinslichen Wertpapieren 68% über dem Vorjahresniveau. Schwächer fielen die Ergebnisse der Bank of America und von Wells Fargo aus. Bei der Bank of America trug der Erfolg in den Sparten Trading und Investment Banking ebenfalls dazu bei, dass sich schwächere Bereiche ausgleichen konnten, obwohl die Ergebnisse dort weniger herausragend waren als die der Konkurrenten JP Morgan Chase und Goldman Sachs. Wells Fargo hingegen hat von allen Banken wohl das schlechteste zweite Quartal verkraften müssen. Die Bank hat im zweiten Quartal ihren ersten vierteljährlichen Verlust seit der großen Rezession verzeichnet. Wells Fargo hat als Folge seine Dividende von 50 auf 10 Cent gekürzt. CEO Charles Scharf hier ganz schnörkellos im Earnings Call.
As you know, Wells Fargo is predominantly a US bank that takes deposits and makes loans. Our balance sheet composition is 80% cash, loans and our investment portfolio. When consumers, small businesses, middle market companies and corporates suffer, we do as well. As the economic environment brought on by COVID negatively impacts our customers and clients, it will filter through to our results primarily in the form of outsized credit losses and compressed net interest margins.
Die Notenbank hat den Banken genau wie anderen börsengelisteten Unternehmen auferlegt, dass sie keine Aktien zurückkaufen dürfen. Außerdem sind ihre Dividenden auf das aktuelle Niveau gedeckelt. Also nichts, was den Aktienkurs künstlich aufpumpt, ist erlaubt. David Allison, Portfolio-Manager bei Hennessy Funds, erklärte auf CNBC, was es heißt.
It sounds like buybacks aren't going to come back for a long time. And the dividends are going to be subject to what the Fed believes the economy looks like, which is, you know, they're really inserting themselves and basically acting like they want to act in a sense that these companies are effectively nationalized. And we're seeing the effect of that today in what they're saying. So they're worried about the economy. They appear to be more worried about the economy than the market is. And this is going to be an ongoing thing. The banks are going to be battling this for the next couple of years as the Fed inserts themselves and says, look, guys, you have to stay liquid. You have to stay safe because we need you guys to help in the recovery effort.
Regulierungen spielen eine große Rolle darin, ob und wenn ja, wie gut die Banken durch eine Krise kommen. In den alljährlichen Bankenstresstests der Notenbank sind diesmal verschiedene Covid-Szenarien eingeführt worden. Die Fed hat die Widerstandsfähigkeit großer Banken unter drei hypothetischen Szenarien analysiert. Eines davon hat einen V-förmigen Verlauf für eine tiefe Rezession und eine schnelle Erholung, dann ein zweites Szenario mit einer langsameren U-förmigen Rezession und Erholung und eine W-förmige Kurve mit einem zweiten Absturz durch eine zweite Welle. Über all das habe ich genauer mit Ken Leon, Research Director, Forschungsleiter von CFRA Research gesprochen.
So I've been trying to make sense of the bank earnings we saw this week. We saw strong performance in certain sectors, in certain fields of their business in trading, for example, investment banking, and we saw weaknesses in other sectors. But I'm just wondering, what was the narrative of last quarter? I mean, corporations and US Americans are worried and they're defaulting on their loans and investors are happily gambling. I mean, that is what trading, the great trading numbers kind of indicate. So what was the narrative?
Essentially, banks, which are lending to both consumer and business segments, are adding to credit reserves. In the quarter, there were substantial loan loss provisions, and this is to build up a reserve. If you will, it's to prepare for the period over the next two or three quarters when the banks would recognize not only a customer delinquency, but a loan loss where they have to charge off. So these reserves is, in essence, the bank's view about what the U.S. economy and perhaps global will be over this nine-month period or longer. And they're very conservative. We are seeing multi-million dollar increases to reserves. As the economy goes through to 2021, we should see some improvement, but the banks have already built up and charged a reserve today that can be used without affecting earnings in the future.
Were you surprised that the trading numbers came in that strong? I'm just wondering, why was it so easy for the banks to really like blow expectations, which not only means that they were great results, but also that the expectations simply were maybe low, and it was very difficult to have any kind of reasonable expectations since they wouldn't give any guidance, and no one knows where this is headed.
Yeah, that's right. And it's always difficult to forecast quarters, but both trading and investment banking were very strong, both for the reason that the Federal Reserve has reduced rates in 12 months, you know, from 2% to almost 0%. We also saw increased volatility. So we're actively seeing trading in equity and fixed income derivatives, both from institution and from retail. Whether that continues remains to be seen. People are home, social distancing, maybe they're trading more. But the investment banking also hit record levels as corporates went to the public markets in the U.S. to either refinance or increase their liquidity with new debt issuance, substantial. You know, each of the banks are up year over year, well over 100 to 150% on debt issuance.
So you touched on that, on it being sustainable. So trading was strong compared to consumer and commercial banking, especially. And trading was good because of higher volatility, or higher volatility indicated more trading activity, I should say. Is this here to stay? I mean, is this sustainable growth? Is that a promising path? Or do banks in the end need to have the loan business more healthy, the commercial business more healthy? Because when I look at the VIX, it has not been as dramatically high, and we can't expect this kind of trading volume to continue. So is that a sustainable path?
It's really a tale of two stories, where the large commercial banks that also have capital markets trading, but they're more significantly impacted by consumer and commercial loans and real estate. Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs are much more investment banks and also have broker-dealer. The equity market doesn't reward investment banks just for trading. You need a business model that has sustainable, repeatable success with revenue. Morgan Stanley, we think, is better positioned than Goldman Sachs because they have a very significant asset management and wealth management business that gives more predictability. Goldman is trying to build up those areas, but it's mostly trading and investment banking for Goldman. Morgan Stanley has those, but they have a world-class number one position in wealth management. That's a big deal because investors in the equity market like predictability. They like to see lower risk and also better position in terms of capital.
Bank stocks have been lagging the S&P 500. And I want to know what has changed to the first quarter results. What has changed to what we have been seeing so far in the sentiment, in the fundamentals? I mean, the impact of the pandemic was bigger in the second quarter, but we had the Fed and the government pouring money into households, into companies.
Well, for banks, they don't really benefit as much from lower rates as consumers and business do. And it puts pressure on anywhere from 40 to 55% of their revenues, which is net interest income. So those rates, or as an analyst, you look at the interest rate spreads or the net interest margin, they are directionally moving negative, not positive. That puts pressure on the non-interest parts of any bank, particularly the ones we're talking about today, which means they have to drive fee revenue, fee income revenue from fees. And that would be investment banking, trading, security services, wealth management, any area that can offset really a declining rate environment. Banks, in terms of stocks, fit into the category of deep value to cyclical. So when we begin to see confidence that the U.S. and global economy, or even in Europe, is going to rebound on a sustainable basis, these stocks will outperform growth stocks, which are actually enjoying the early stage of a rebound to the, in this case, the U.S. stock market to almost record levels.
So I know that's almost impossible to answer, but I mean, I'm certain you have an idea of where you see bank stocks, let's say the Dow Jones U.S. Banks Index in the future.
Well, we can speak to earnings or valuation, and several of the large banks, those with commercial loans or consumer, are trading below net tangible book value. So that would give them the label of being deep value stocks. The ability of having strong capital means they're not troubled like some other areas of the market in industrial or consumer discretionary. And they're not the problem as they were in the financial crisis going back over 10 years ago. They're really part of the solution. They're well capitalized. They're likely to reward shareholders with return of capital as you look out over 2 or 3 years. So I kind of like where we are. We have buy recommendations on Bank of America, Citigroup, and JP Morgan Chase. We have holds on Wells Fargo, and then we have a buy on Morgan Stanley and a hold on Goldman Sachs. I don't think investors should sell these stocks because typically for deep value or cyclical stocks, bank stocks, once the market firmly believes there's a sustained recovery, these stocks will bounce up sharply, outperforming the S&P 500. Our strategists at CFRA would also say that it's very difficult for the U.S. equity market or the S&P 500 to continue to grow strongly without participation in the financials, and the banks is a large part of the financial sector.
So you already brought up the financial crisis, and I think it is tempting to look back to 2008 and to the financial crisis, which is very different, obviously. This time it is the consumer and external factor like the pandemic, but the banks also went in stronger, probably thanks to regulation.
Yes, that's correct. So the Dodd-Frank stress tests, even on the adverse scenario of that model, there were 33 banks participating, including Deutsche Bank. And the worst case is $433 billion of potential loan loss. They added, though, some new measures. So they said, well, our old tests for over 10 years, that's fine. But what happens if we have unemployment in the U.S. greater than 10%? So they added what was called the COVID-19 impact. And in the worst case scenario there, let's say it's 15% unemployment, the loan loss of these 33 banks would be $800 billion. So the Fed, even with their message on the stress tests in late June, were more conservative in tone or action than the banks. But you got this environment where neither the Federal Reserve Bank or the leading banks of the U.S. really know what will happen in the future with the economy. What's likely, and the Fed led with this again with their report, V-shape is off the table. It's either going to be a prolonged U-shape, or W-shape, closely following the ups and downs of the of COVID-19.
Ken, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Let's do it again.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah, I would love to.
Well, if anything comes up, just reach out and I'd be happy to do this again.
I appreciate it. Bye.
All right, take care.
How are you doing, New York? Oh, so much better. Ich kann aufatmen hören, im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes. Wir hatten vergangene Woche den ersten Tag, an dem kein einziger Mensch in der Stadt an Covid-19 gestorben ist. New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo ist hörbar stolz auf uns New Yorker, sagt er hier bei der Tonight Show von Jimmy Fallon letzte Woche.
I tell you, everything is good. You know, we went through hell and back, as you know, in New York. But we went from having, Jimmy, the worst infection rate in the country. We now have the best infection rate. So we really turned the corner. New Yorkers stepped up. They really did the right thing. They did the socially distancing. They stayed at home. And we tamed the beast here in New York.
Ganz schön stolz klingt er. Gegen den Präsidenten hat er in gewohnter Manier natürlich auch geschossen.
You had the President of the United States basically denying that the virus existed. I believe he played politics with it. And you can't deal with the virus politically. You had to be smart. You had to get it under control. You had to do what we did. You had to close down. People had to take precautions, wearing the mask, right? We were the first state to say you had to wear a mask. And we have the infection rate way down low. And it was never going to work, what the president said. It was never going to work to deny it, hope that it was magically going to disappear.
Wir hier nennen das inzwischen New York Tough, diese Streitlust. Geprägt hat das Cuomo. Als hier alles losging, Anfang April, hat sein Büro ein rührseliges Schwarz-Weiß-Video veröffentlicht, das hier aber trotzdem sehr gut ankam.
Bring down that anxiety, bring down that fear. Bring down that paranoia. And we're going to get through it. Because we are New York. And because we've dealt with a lot of things. And because we are smart. You have to be smart to make it in New York. And we are resourceful. We are showing how resourceful we are. And because we are united. And when you are united, there is nothing you can't do. And because we are New York tough, we are tough. You have to be tough. This place makes you tough. But it makes you tough in a good way.
Das war's von mir für diese Ausgabe. Wenn Sie Anregungen, Feedback oder Wünsche haben, schreiben Sie mir einfach eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Bis nächsten Montag. Ich wünsche Ihnen eine erfolgreiche Woche. Bleiben Sie gesund. Aus New York von ganzem Herzen, Ihre Sophie Schimanski.